This is Brian Powers. My guest tonight is legendary music producer and record man L.A. Reid, who has transformed the music business by discovering and producing some of the greatest acts in pop music history. That list of artists include Toni Braxton, Kanye West, Rihanna, TLC, Outkast, Mariah Carey, Pink, Justin Bieber, and Usher. While at the helm of four celebrated music labels, LaFace, Arista, Island Def Jam, and Epic, L.A. Reid set his sights on finding one star after the next, and then worked behind the soundboard to create some of the most unforgettable hits of the last two generations. He's now telling his story of his rise in the record business in his new book, Sing to Me, which chronicles his R&B roots here in the Queen City that led to a career as a songwriter, producer, record executive, and judge on the hit reality TV show, X Factor. L.A. Reid, welcome to Around Cincinnati.
Thank you so much, Brian. I'm really happy to be here. So happy to be home.
Thanks for coming by to talk about your book.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. You know, as you mentioned, it's called Sing to Me, and it's a journey that I'm still on, but I've really enjoyed writing about it and just really want to share with people.
I think it's a great book, and it's got a lot of great stories. And one of the things I love about it is all these famous people that you know, you met a lot of them when they weren't famous at all, when a lot of them were just teenagers, like Outkast and TLC and Pink.
Yes, I favor signing as a record executive, as a record man, I like to call myself. I favor signing teens. And I don't know if it was by design in the beginning, but over the years, you know, I've noticed that I have much greater success when I sign younger people. And it also helps those people have much longer careers. It's a little more difficult when I sign artists that are already perhaps 30, and that's not old, but when you're 30, it's not the same as being like 16 or 17, and there are people who are growing up with you. At 30, you're kind of already grown, you know.
And you seem to have a good instinct. I mean, I guess you must see something in them. You probably can't explain it, but you must get some sort of feeling that you thought these people have it.
I like to think I have some intuition about talent. I like to improve. I really would like to improve upon it, right? There are so many wonderful artists that I haven't signed that I wish that I'd signed, you know. So yeah, it's a muscle, and it can get fatigued, and sometimes it can be in full performance mode.
I'm sure you have tons of people wanting to audition to you all the time.
Yeah, that's why I wrote Sing to Me, because I really want the world to know that I'm still looking. Yes, always.
And I guess some of the skills that you would have got, like people skills, you've got from your mom living here in Cincinnati.
My mom had great instincts for people. I think they were much better than mine by a long shot. Mine is more talent-based, and my mother's was just people-based. You know, someone just told me that if I listened to my mother's advice, then I probably wouldn't have gotten burned, you know, some of the times that maybe I did. You know, I don't even think I've ever gotten burned, right? But somebody just read my book and they said, listen, if you listened to your mother, you wouldn't have trusted so many people.
Would your mom offer advice even when you were very successful?
Yes. There did become a point when, you know, my mother stopped giving me advice and just started just giving me support. I think there was a point, yeah. But I think she still had strong opinions, but she probably at a certain point thought, maybe I didn't want to hear it. Maybe I didn't. Maybe.
One of the things I love about your book is it does a really great job of tying up all your accomplishments that you've done in your career. And I'm familiar with you as a record executive. Your book does a really amazing job. It talks about your development as a musician and how you started out here in Cincinnati.
Yes, I did. I started out here in Cincinnati. We lived in Mount Auburn, and it was absolutely when I first started playing drums. And I drove by there today. I drove by that house on Highland Avenue just to look. But that was where it all sort of came together for me, and the realization that I was a musician and that I, you know, had talent enough to play. Yeah, but I started out as a musician, and then I became I joined bands. The bands had guys that could write songs, so I learned a little bit about songwriting from the guys in the band, and I collaborate with them. And it's been a kind of interesting journey. You know, it's so funny, because I know I sound really, probably sound crazy when I say it, but it almost feels scripted. I'm not kidding. It feels scripted that I start as a musician and learn how to write a little bit, play in bands, start producing records, become a record executive, and meet some of the most incredible people ever. It's great. But the truth is, I do come from Cincinnati, very humble beginnings. And Cincinnati, while I love it, wasn't a city that gave you the confidence that anything is possible.
In this town, and being African-American, you had limited opportunities, especially growing up in the 60s when you did.
I think that's true. I never felt that way. I've never felt that the world treated me any differently because I was African-American. I never felt like there was anything I couldn't do. I never saw obstacles. I never felt limitations.
You're growing up in the 60s, so how were you getting introduced to music? Were you buying records? Were you listening to radio stations here in town?
I found music everywhere. Yes, I listened to the radio. There was a lot of music at home where we grew up, and I worked at my uncle's barbershop downtown. It was called Monday's Barbershop. And he used to send me on errands. I was like 9 years old, and he used to send me on errands, and I would go run errands for him, get lunch, or, you know, go pick up something at a store. And I would always go to the record store.
What were some of the record stores you liked going to?
I don't remember all of them. The one that stands out is Globe Records.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I used to go to Globe Records and just say, what's the latest 45s? And I would buy them. And you could tell the hot ones because they'd have them in a stack behind the counter, like the James Brown records. Like, they went like hotcakes.
Right.
I used to buy the James Brown records or Aretha Franklin's records. And as I got older and started buying albums, that's when the rock kicked in, and, you know, buying the Led Zeppelins and Jimi Hendrix and anybody that I can get my hands on, you know. But yeah, Cincinnati felt musical to me. I went to school at Hughes High School, right across the street from the campus of the University of Cincinnati. So the entire Clifton area feels like a college campus, right? So there was a lot of music. I used to go to the Conservatory of Music just to, you know, my friend and I used to sneak in and play the pipe organ and play piano. And I felt music was everywhere.
And you had like a mentor at Hughes High School, didn't you?
Yes. My music teacher, Mr. Terry Brown, the late Terry Brown, was the choir teacher. I had a band teacher, too. His name was Eddie Love. I don't know why, but I liked the singers. I wanted to be around the singers more than I wanted to be around, you know, the musicians, the horn players. The singers seemed hipper. And Terry would let me hang out in his classroom, like, all day, which isn't great for great, but it was certainly great for music education. And I'd sit in his class and watch all the kids sing and learned a lot of things that were important to the singers. And those singers taught me how to listen to music in a much different way. Yeah, so my high school music class with Terry Brown at Hughes High School was the breeding ground for me and the things that I've done.
Now, you were playing drums in high school, but before then, you had a couple uncles. You mentioned one uncle had the barbershop. He was a big jazz lover.
Yeah.
And then you had these uncles who played drums, but they seemed to be into jazz.
Yeah, they were all into jazz. My Uncle Reuben owned a barbershop, and he'd play jazz. My Uncle Albert is a drummer, jazz drummer, and he had a cousin named Raymond who was also a drummer, but it was all jazz. Everybody played jazz, and then I came along. I liked funk. I liked, you know, the Meters and James Brown and, you know, Aretha Franklin. I liked the soul and R&B stuff,
yeah.
And, you know, but all the people around me, the adults, were all jazz people, and I love jazz, but I didn't love jazz the way I loved that funk and that soul and ultimately that rock.
There was a lot of funk going on here in the late 60s, early 70s. You had James Brown starting at King Records,
right.
But you had the Ohio Players and you had...
There's so many bands from this area, right? To name a few, there was Zapp, who was so funky. There was Bootsy Collins and all the various iterations of Bootsy's bands. There was out of the Ohio Valley, you know, there was Slave, Lakeside, LaVert, the OJs, Daz, God, man, it was so many. Midnight Star. And that's the band that really gave us our break, was Midnight Star.
Yeah, but when we were talking about them, I wanted to talk about a band that you started playing with after you got out of high school, which I guess was Pure Essence Essence.
Yeah, Pure Essence, or the Essence, or the E-Band that we ultimately ended up calling it, right? Yeah, that was my band. That was a near and dear to my heart band, and that was college, literally, because we formed the band right out of high school, And we made every mistake you could ever make, and we learned everything you could ever need to learn from the mistakes we made. And when I stopped and started the deal, it was with all of the knowledge and experiences that we'd gotten from Essence. And so we fast-tracked to success with the deal based on those college
right.
years.
Could you describe with Essence what kind of band they were?
Yeah, Essence was a progressive funk band. Progressive because of the lyrics. We wouldn't write what we call mindless lyrics. We only wrote songs about things that we felt had real substance, social issues, perhaps social injustice, perhaps people's obsession with materialistic things. We just talked about things that we thought were important and, you know, transcendental meditation and just concentrating on trying to have a higher level of thinking.
Is that some of your influence from hanging around UC campus and stuff?
That was a little bit of being around the college kids. It was a little bit of what was happening in music because of the civil rights movement of the 60s and 70s and the Vietnam War. It brought about a desire for people to think up, right? And we were affected by it. You know, the world had to become a better place. And everybody at that point really, people wanted to meditate so that they could, you know, be at peace with themselves. People wanted to elevate. And that was the music we wrote in the deal. And we also listened to progressive jazz fusion bands. And so, yeah, Essence was something, really something
and,
special.
And you guys recorded an album, and you had a song that WCIN, which was more of a funk format
right.
station, but then you had WEBN here in town, which is a rock station, playing another different song.
Exactly. I just had the greatest experience before I came here. I went to WEBN, and they gave me a copy of the first album that we recorded on, and it was called the WEBN Album Project Number 2. I didn't realize it was number 2 until I saw it today. It was dated 1977, and it had a song on it by our band, Essence. We had become Essence by then, and the song was, it's funny, because some copies say Essence and some copies say Pure Essence. The song was called Third Rock, and they played it on WEBN FM on this album, and the first time I heard it, I was at my apartment in Fairmount, and it was life-changing. It was a life-changing moment, and right at that very moment, I knew I needed to hear that all the time. I needed to hear music on the radio all the time. By the way, I'm a big believer in radio.
So you guys are playing around town. One of the places in your book you mentioned is Club Diplomat?
Yes, the Club Diplomat that became the Palm Room. It used to be called Waller's Diplomat. I'm learning all of this because I've been in town all day, and people are helping me like, yeah, you got it almost right. But it was called Waller's Diplomat. It became the Palm Room. There was Mr. Kelly's that was on Montgomery Road. There were a few other places that their names are escaping me, but maybe 4 or 5 clubs. Oh, there was the Clock Bar on Bernard Avenue, mm-hmm. right? But our main spot was the Club Diplomat and the Palm Room, yes.
And what was your crowd? What was who'd be coming? What was your audience at that time?
Friends, family, right. People who liked it, you know. But club goers. But it was nice, man. We used to have packed houses. It was incredible.
But then disco came, right?
Yes, and then, well, first the fire came. But, you know, you guys have to read my book. I can't tell you everything.
Right, yes.
But disco did come, and we picked up and we moved to Indianapolis because in Indianapolis what we discovered was the bands didn't only play on the weekends. The bands played 6 nights per week and could do up to 3 or 4 shows per night. It was like having an internship in Vegas. And we would do it. So we moved there for several years and played in all the clubs. And there, we really learned our chops. We really learned, the stamina, the endurance that it takes to do 4 one-hour shows each night of cover material. Maybe 1 set of original material and then 3 sets of cover material. And so with that, you start to learn everything. You learn how to play every song. You learn every riff, every guitar riff, every piano lick, every drum lick. You learn everything about the music that you're playing. But disco came, and those opportunities started to fade away. one of my favorite stories in my book is when I go to the club in Indianapolis called the Night Flight, and I ask the club owner for an advance on next week's gig because I needed to buy food for my guys. And he says, well, there ain't going to be no next week because you're fired. And let me tell you why. And he explains to me that, you know, you guys are boring. Your band is boring. You guys are not understanding. You think this is the music business. This is the entertainment business. And when he said it, it was like, ding. And a light bulb went off. He said, wait a minute. It's not music. It's entertainment. And that's when I got it. And that was the epiphany that completely changed my career.
And that led to the deal.
And so we went back to Cincinnati, and K.O., who's my friend and my bass player, we said, okay, who are some of the guys that we went to school with who are entertainers who can sing as opposed to just singers? And we cast our band, and we put Darnell Bristol and Carlos Green in our band, and these guys were like, they were stars. You know, they were stars. These were like handsome, talented guys. They were entertainers. And we went about putting the deal together. And then we went back to Indianapolis, played the clubs a little more just to save a little money to make demos. And then we quit, started to make demos, writing songs, and started to produce the records ourselves. Now, we didn't produce the records. We wrote the songs. We made demos. And when we wanted to go in the studio to produce them, we needed a keyboard player. So we called our old friend, Bo Watson, who was the keyboard player for Midnight Star, and asked him to come and do the session for us. Bo Watson heard our band. He went back and he told his manager and he told his band leader, Reggie Calloway, you got to hear these guys. And they came and they heard us and they offered us a deal to sign with them and they would help us get a recording contract. I said, okay, great. This is perfect. Come by the studio later, they say. Come by later and just hang around and just see how we do things and just get a feel for recording. So one night I'm in the studio and I hear this song called Play Another Slow Jam, This Time Make It Sweet. And I was wondering, who is singing this? This guy is singing his ass off. I mean, he's jamming. And when he comes out of the room, it's a familiar face. It's a guy I met in Indianapolis, and his name is Kenny Babyface Edmonds. And I'm like, that was you? Oh, my God. And that was the day I met Kenny, officially met him, and officially recruited him. He probably didn't know I was recruiting him at that point, but he and I became partners and started to write songs together.
And that led to you guys becoming producers and starting your own record label.
Yeah, after we produced a lot of songs from various artists, you know, Bobby Brown was one, Whitney Houston, Pebbles, Paula Abdul, Johnny Gill, you know, Babyface himself, The Deal. We started producing records, and they all started to come out around the same time. All of a sudden, I looked at the chart one day, and I was like, Kenny, look at this. Like, this thing is loaded with our songs. Us! And I couldn't believe it. And then that sort of was the segue into, well, maybe we should start our own label. And we did. And we got funding from Arista Records, and we started LaFace Records, moved to Atlanta, Georgia, and put the stake in the ground and said, we are here. And that was the beginning of my executive career.
And it has just kept going and going.
Yes. And I've been very fortunate to meet some incredible talents along the way.
And you're still on the lookout for new talent.
Every day. My book is all about, you know why I wrote this book? So that the world would know that I'm looking for the next one. My book is basically a want ad. I want stars.
Well, it's an amazing book. I loved it. It's just got so many great stories, and I'm so glad that your story is finally getting out, that people know your life story, because it's really inspirational.
Thank you so much. This is fun, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, for sure.
My guest this evening has been L.A. Reid, whose new biography is Sing to Me, My Story of Making Music, Finding Magic, and Searching for Who's Next. You'll find a link to his new book at wvxu.org/AroundCincinnati. I'm Brian Powers.